So I will go into these databases. I will put in the CPT code for physical therapy or a doctor's office visit or whatever. Let's based on that geographic area, Valdosta, Georgia, or rural Georgia. Then I go to Fair Health and do the same thing and get that cost. And then I go to PMIC and get that cost. So I have three data points. And whichever one is the median, that's the one we use to cost it.
Hey out there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. Today we are talking about life care plans in nursing home cases. In other words, how we essentially account for future damages, how those costs affect our clients and how those are computed and how they're argued. But we're definitely not having that conversation alone. We have the fantastic Bonnie McCormick to walk us through this process. But before we get into that, it is time once again for another nursing home regulation question of the week and another opportunity for you to win the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug. It's a good mug. Actually, I've been using this one. It's not a prop. I was drinking some Coke Zero out of that just a little bit earlier. Well, how do I win that, Rob? Well, you can win not this specific mug, but you can win a Nursing Home Abuse Podcast mug by going over to our TikTok at Justice for Residents, find the question of the week, and look for the thumbnail that has the Real World Road Rules Challenge on it. If you know, you know. Then comment your answer and your favorite guilty pleasure reality TV show. So comment your answer to the question of the week. Input your favorite guilty pleasure reality TV show. Mine at some point was Real World Road Rules Challenge. That was where the contestants from, not contestants, but the, I don't want to say actors, the people from the real world and some of the people from Road Rules kind of had to go through, I think, physical challenges. I think this show is probably 30 years old at least. But anyway, that was my, I used to watch that, I think. I sound like somebody that's from another planet. What is a guilty pleasure show that I watch now? I don't know. I usually just watch YouTube stuff, ridiculous stuff. Anyway, that's how you win it. One random winner will be selected on Sunday on TikTok or at our website, which is shinkfirm.com/podcast/giveaway. Prizes ship at the end of the month. Good luck to you. I would say this week, the difficulty level is medium hard. If you get this right, you can skip out on work tomorrow, okay? Unless you do something super important. Under 42 CFR 483.20A, which deals with resident admissions, what must the resident have in order to be admitted to the nursing home? Is it A, discharge paperwork from a prior care provider, B, physician's orders for the resident's immediate care, or C, authorization from the resident or resident's representative? And that is actually B. The resident must be admitted with physician's orders for immediate care at the facility. All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. We're talking about life care plans. What are they? When do you use them? What is involved in making them? But we're not doing that alone. We have Bonnie McCormick with us. Bonnie McCormick is a seasoned nurse with nearly 32 years of experience, bringing a strong clinical background in both hospital and long-term care settings. She also has extensive expertise in the managed care industry. Since 2018, Bonnie has worked as a legal nurse consultant and as a certified life care planner. A dedicated patient advocate throughout her career, she remains committed to improving healthcare outcomes. Bonnie resides in Jacksonville, Florida with her husband and sons. And actually, you can listen to Bonnie. She was on the podcast. Oh, I don't know. We batch record these, so I'm not quite sure what number this would be. Maybe let me see if I can figure that out. Bonnie, I think episode 254, she talked about infection control and prevention in nursing homes. So this is Bonnie's second appearance on the show, and we are so happy to have her back on. Bonnie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I guess the first question we should talk about is what is a life care plan?
That's a great question. A life care plan is a comprehensive evidence-based document that outlines the current and future medical, therapeutic, supportive care needs of an individual who suffered a catastrophic injury or a chronic illness. And it projects the costs over the individual's lifetime and serves as kind of a roadmap for future care needs and along with the costs associated with those needs.
In general, why would you want a life care plan? Like, what is a life care plan used to do?
The life care plan is used to guide caregivers and attorneys on what the person who's been injured or who has a chronic illness of some sort, chronic pain, chronic injury, any of that. It helps them have a roadmap so you know what's coming down the road based on my experience as a life care planner, as a nurse for over 30 years, and all of the clinical experiences that I've had. It helps to have a roadmap to know what's coming down the road so you can quantify that number and make a more educated decision on how much this is all going to cost.
So it's a part of the damages process. Like if you're bringing a case, they bring on Bonnie to say, what are the future costs of
That's right.
treating this individual's injuries?
That's exactly right. And a life care plan doesn't go into causation. The life care plan is really only about the damages that are sustained and how much they're going to cost throughout the person's lifetime.
So I guess before we kind of get into the more substance of the life care plans, what does the life care planner's background consist of? Like what experiences and education does the typical life care planner have to kind of do what they do?
Well, to become a life care planner, you typically need a clinical background, most commonly in nursing or rehab or case management, something like that. Plus you do need some formal training in life care planning through a recognized certification program. Most life care planners also have experience in legal nurse consulting or catastrophic case management or disability evaluation. So not everybody can be a life care planner. You really do have to have some specialized training and knowledge. It really helps to have a background in case management and coding and costing and working in databases to really be effective. But you also have to be able to understand the client in a holistic way so that you can project costs, not just for their medical care, but also looking at, do they need home modifications? Do they need to be transferred to a higher level of care? Are they going to need have their transportation needs? All the supplies that might have come with a new injury. So you really have to have a really strong clinical background, but you also have to be able to look at it from a case management perspective and understand what all the needs are globally for that person as they relate to the injury at hand.
For me, I've been doing nursing home abuse cases for over 10 years at this point. I've never, unfortunately, a lot of my clients have passed.
Right, right.
Or the injuries are such that, it's kind of like a one and done broken bone or a pressure injury that's healed and come back or whatever. I've never really considered life care planning,
right.
In some of my cases. Can you provide an example? Like obviously you don't have to give away any privileged information, but like who that does nursing home abuse, like what kind of case would warrant a life care plan?
Okay, so I'll tell you about the last one I just did, a few weeks ago for a nursing home case, because I don't just do nursing home cases, I do all of them. But
sure.
The last nursing home case I had, it wasn't nursing home necessarily, it was assisted living. So there was a woman who was in assisted living who was doing very well, very independent, living a great life. And, she did have some comorbidities and some needs. But the assisted living facility did not recognize that she was deteriorating. She got a terrible obstruction, bowel obstruction, and she ended up perfing and getting peritonitis and ended up with a colostomy, which then meant that she could no longer live in assisted living. She needed a higher level of care, and she has all these supplies. There are all kinds of things that she could no longer do because of her injury. She deteriorated after she had to have the colostomy surgery. She tried to go to rehab, and get it back, but she was never the same again. So then now all these costs associated with her immobility and, for the rest of her lifespan, which because she's very elderly, the rest of her lifespan was only about 6.5 years, if I remember correctly. But those are costs that are associated with that. And she no longer could stay at the existing level of care. So we had to move her up to a different level of care, which is more expensive. We had to provide all kinds of supplies for her colostomy care. We had to get, wound care nurse in there because she was having issues with it, So that's the kind of thing that I've seen. That's just one example of a life care plan that I've done for an elderly woman, where even though she only has technically 5 or 6 years left in the CDC, we use the CDC guidelines for life expectancy. But at the end of the day, she could live another 10 years. You never know. But it's the point is to get her back to as close to independence that she was prior to this injury, so that she can continue to live her life as best she can.
In Georgia, we have the old 1949 mortality table. It hasn't been
Oh.
updated. Yeah, it hasn't been updated in like 70 years, but it's still that's actually in our code. Like it's in a Georgia code that you use that for life
Really?
expectancy. Yeah.
See, I would probably just go back to the CDC because that's federal. So,
Right.
if I don't know, I've never actually done a life care plan for an elderly person in Georgia. That is very interesting. But yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of tables out there that use statistics, national statistics, and national data that the Center for Disease Control uses for life expectancy.
Okay, so I kind of understand the basic blueprint. You've got how long the person likely will live, whatever standard you use, whether it's the federal CDC or
Right.
the backwoods Georgia
Right.
mortality table.
The World
But
War
like
II one.
how are you quantifying this stuff? Like, do you have to go out and like, hey, ostomy care person, like would how much do you charge? Like how do you blueprint all the costs?
Well, like I said, we extrapolate the cost of the care over the remainder of the person's expected lifespan using the CDC life expectancy charts as a foundation, but then we reference national costing databases to determine a median cost for each service or item tailored to the individual's geographic location. So the final report quantifies the injury's impact, not just on physical health, but on every aspect of the person's life, factoring in the medical care, the living arrangement changes, transportation needs, any other life adjustments resulting from the injury. But we do use national databases that gather data from all over the country. And then we use a geographic zip code locator because somebody who needs physical therapy in rural Georgia, it's not going to cost the same as someone who needs physical therapy in San Francisco. It's going to be different. So you have to use GeoZip locators and geographic adjustment factors for that. But we use national databases that are very expensive that we belong to, costing and coding databases, to help us pull that data.
Well, by that same token, then, like, how do you know what a physical therapist is going to cost in rural Georgia, like in 5 years? Like, how are you just doing like inflation? Like, how do you adjust for that?
That's a good question. We do not adjust for inflation. So all life care plans are in the today moment. And then an economist will go through and take our final numbers and then project those out according to inflation. So I might come up with, $1.8 million in costs, but then an economist will take that 1.8 and project it out to the person's lifetime, with inflation adjustments.
Okay, so this is kind of the dumb question, but like, what does it look like? What is it? Is it a piece of paper? Like, is it a little graph? Like, walk us through like what we would see if we got a life care
Sure.
plan for one of our clients.
So, well, I mean, I'm a nurse life care planner. There's other kinds of life care planners like psychologists and rehab people. I can only speak to how a nurse life care planner would do it and how I do it. But it's a document and it's a very lengthy document and it has, an overview of the condition and the background. It takes into account like comorbidities, prior existing conditions so that we can take those costs out because if somebody already had diabetes or something, we're not going to factor that into the broken hip, for example. We have to be able to show which prior conditions we've taken out. And we go through that whole thing. We explain their condition very clearly. We do a case overview just real quick because we're not into causation. Then we get to the lifetime cost tables and then we break it down. This is the outpatient costs. These are the inpatient hospital costs. These are the therapy costs, transportation. If there's any increase in lodging expenses, we do therapies. We do home modifications if someone is living at home. I had to cost out a brand new bathroom for somebody because the wheelchair won't fit through the door anymore. It's not ADA compliant. This week, I had to figure out how much a handicap accessible van costs, that you can get a scooter in the back of. So someone with, a leg injury can continue to have mobility and so forth. So it really just takes, you know, it's just a bunch of tables after that and then one big number at the bottom. And then I provide detailed cost tables showing the three data points, because I always use three data points to cost out my life care plan. So I'll use, you know, the median of those three. And then I provide at the end as an appendix all the big, ugly cost tables that go along with it and showing all the costs.
I think I might have missed that. What do you mean, like the three numbers and you show the median? What does that mean?
So let's say you want to know physical therapy, what it costs in rural Georgia, okay, like Valdosta, Georgia, at least for example. So we'll go in and put in, I use Find a Code, I use fairhealth.org, and I use PMIC, which is a physician fee reference. So I will go into these databases, and I have several other databases, but those are the three I use this week anyway. And I will put in the CPT code for physical therapy or a doctor's office visit or whatever. Let's say it's a follow-up doctor's visit that would, with moderate, you know, complexity, that would be a 99214. So that's the CPT code. So you put the CPT code in there, and Find a Code will give me, based on that geographic area, Valdosta, Georgia, or rural Georgia, you know, what it would cost in that zip code. Then I go to FairHealth and do the same thing and get that cost. And then I go to PMIC and get that cost. So I have three data points. And whichever one is the median, that's the one we use to cost it. That's, you know, we don't use the low one, we don't use the high one, we use the one in the middle.
Well, Bonnie, this all seems well and good, but what are some of the kind of the attacks or the defenses against this? Like, what are when you're cross-examined, how are they coming at you?
They try to come at you disputing causation, but then I just kind of refuse to get into that conversation because I'm not here to talk about causation. We can argue that the injuries were due to a underlying health condition rather than neglect or claiming the plaintiff received appropriate care based on their baseline status. But at the end of the day, we just have to isolate it down to the injury and how the injury itself has affected their future care. And that's why I do include comorbidities and prior conditions, so that, you know, I kind of cut that off at the knees. And defense teams may also challenge the necessity or the duration of future care projected in the life care plan. So they'll say, oh, well, she's very elderly, she's not going to live 6 more years. And we say, how do you know that? You know better than the CDC. You know, I can only go by data that is nationally recognized and peer reviewed.
I see. So essentially, they want to try to attack you on causation, which is no good because you're not there to testify to that.
I'm
Then
not.
they want to argue, and then the argument is the mortality tables. And then what are you ever attacked in terms of like these numbers don't make any sense? Like why you don't need a van? Like why does this person need a van? Get them a, you know, a dune buggy or like whatever it is. Like how are you attacked in that way?
Not really, because I approach life care planning from a practical perspective. My clients generally don't want me to be unfair. I mean, I'm not costing out a Tesla truck, you know, something very expensive.
Right.
The mobility van I just costed out this week was a Chrysler Pacifica used for $43,000. I mean, that is a very reasonable cost. And, you know, I can prove, and that was the median cost from the three vehicles that I looked at. So they can try to come after me with the numbers, but those are kind of indisputable, where I have, because I have three data sources, and the industry standard is to use three data points and use the 75% percentile of the median. That's how we do it. That's just the industry standard. So they can try to, nobody really has tried to come after me as far as like the actual numbers themselves, because they're kind of indisputable the way I put them in a, you know, the only thing that they try to come after is like some type of therapy that's not necessarily, they think it's not medically necessary, like prolotherapy or PRP therapy or something, which is why I do a lot of peer-reviewed research and put that in the life care plan with APA formatted peer-reviewed literature. Because, and the other thing too is I'm not coming up with those treatment plans myself. I'm collaborating with the physicians who are coming up with these treatment plans. I'm just costing it out.
That's that. That was actually going to be my next question. It's like, are you like putting hands on the on this particular person that you're doing the life care plan for, or is it just you're just looking at medical records? Are you walk? How
No.
are you? How are you coming up? If the person needs
Right.
physical therapy, how do you know that?
Well, it's not in my scope of practice to prescribe therapies for somebody. But what I do is I do a full nursing assessment. So I meet with the person, depending on the injury. I either meet with them in person or I meet with them via Zoom. It just kind of depends on the person. I've done both. And then I go through their entire psychosocial, you know, everything that they want to talk about with me. Then I get into their symptoms and I create nursing diagnoses list. So when I say they need, you know, certain therapies, it's either based on a treatment plan provided to me by a physician, or it's based on my nursing knowledge over the last 30 plus years of what a person will need who is in the same position as them based on my experience and training.
Okay. Because I mean, I guess there would be instances in which it's like, okay, they're prescribed X for a certain amount of time, but like, how are you going to figure out whether or not that needs to be like continued, right? Like,
right. It's, I mean, the short answer is it's based on my experience over the last 30 years working in managed care, working in case management, working at the bedside, based on my 30 years of knowledge and experience as a nurse, and also based on physician treatment plans that have been provided to me. Mm-hmm. And it's also based on the standard of care throughout the United States at, you know, at this time. You know, I know that if somebody has, you know, a spinal fusion, they are going to need physical therapy. You know, I know that because of my 30 years of experience and knowing sure. that I've, you know, my time in the hospital, and I know what a spinal fusion is, and I know what that's what's going to take after that. But most of the time, the physician will have written that as a follow-up care order. And then also we take into account aging with the illness, because a lot of people, you know, are going to deteriorate no matter what you do. And so you have to take that into account and look to the future. Like, you know, they're probably in the future going to need X, Y, and Z because of the injury that they have right now.
So, okay. So I can see that being a fight amongst lawyers. Then you're just providing, mm-hmm. you're providing the number and the cost, and then they can argue about, well, part of this cost has to do with the fact that the individual is just getting older. Part of this cost has to do with something that they already had to begin with, et cetera.
Right.
You're just providing the numbers. I get it.
I'm providing the numbers and a framework for care.
The framework. Okay. So what about the idea that you are saying that you're providing a nursing care plan, right? Like, mm-hmm. does that mean that you can provide a life care plan for somebody that, like you said, like an ostomy, somebody that, you know, I don't know, mm-hmm. like, maybe they broke a leg and now one leg shorter than the other one. Like, is there a limit to the quote unquote nursing life care plan that you can do?
I mean, it has to be within reason. If somebody's, you know, had some kind of leg or a below the knee amputation, for example, I pretty much know they're going to have to, you know, have a prosthesis, and they're going to have to, along with that prosthesis, they're going to need gait training. They're going to need physical therapy. They're going to need massage therapy. They're going to need all these other, you know, all these other therapies that may or may not be written in a doctor's order. I try to get a doctor to give me treatment plans, but sometimes they're not very responsive. But I can provide a usual and customary treatment plan. You know, this is usually what happens with someone with a BKA, a below the knee amputation, because I can do literature searches and I can provide that documentation with peer-reviewed literature. And from my experience of the last 30 years of being in this industry.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us once again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. If you have any ideas for topics that you would like for me to talk about, please let me know. If you have any ideas for people that you want me to talk to, please let me know that as well. New nurses, new episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast come out every single Monday. And once again, please make sure to enter to win the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug by going to our TikTok and answering the question of the week, along with your favorite guilty pleasure television show. And with that, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.